And in the middle of the day, it's Bathrobes Pier's Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pier, Robert Norse. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Every Sunday at 11, you get me and a whole series of interviews, notes, songs, and other stuff concerning civil rights for poor people. This week we're going to be focusing on Palo Alto and on San Jose, because those are the two cities that are facing serious attack through their own city councils against poor people. Santa Barbara and Mountain View are also facing attack, and we're going to be talking about them. And indeed, in Santa Cruz, we have the continuing attack on the poor, and you'll be able to make yourself heard on that issue 2 days from now, Tuesday, April 22nd, at City Council at 7 o'clock in the evening. And we suggest you do that, or I do anyway. Come to City Council to speak at the oral communications period. That's the public comment period when you can come and speak and actually be heard by a larger audience in the City Council itself, by folks throughout the county watching on channel 71, is it? I think it's 71, might be 72, the cable access station. Everything you say, everything the council says, goes out over that station so that it's not simply confined to the ears of seven people who often don't want to hear what you have to say. As listeners who have been following the show are probably aware, there has been a crackdown on activists, at least in terms of FBI harassment in the last month. There have been no further instances of FBI harassment other than the three we reported a week or two ago. Linda LeMaster, Jim Costner, and Kitten Reynolds all were interrogated by the FBI about alleged militia involvement, bombing of court buildings, and gun running, things of this sort. Pretty strange stuff, considering these are all nonviolent activists who have no criminal record of any kind of violent activity whatsoever, and all of whom are connected with the City Hall sleepers protest, 7.5 month vigil that was in front of City Hall last year, trying to change the minds of the community and the City Council regarding the importance of basic civil rights for homeless people in our city and county, particularly in our city. So harassment has been on the rise. There's also, of course, been a continuing failure to deal with the basic underlying conditions that make harassment inevitable for homeless people generally. The city's anti-homeless sleeping ban, the law that makes it illegal to sleep outside after 11 o'clock at night in Santa Cruz, or to cover up with blankets anywhere in the city limits on all public and most private property. That law was the subject of some controversy this winter when three council members actually got it together to propose a potential change, not even a real change, but a potential change in the event of a winter shelter emergency. However, that didn't get anywhere because of the actions of Michael Rodkin and Cynthia Matthews, who moved to stifle the debate before it began in December and have not allowed the debate to resurface. Instead, we had a March 4th homelessness session by the City Council, which came up with lots and lots of suggestions, but none of which has resurfaced in a report, much less in City Council. And the City Council meeting coming up this Tuesday will be an opportunity for those of us who are wondering what the hell happened to all the 6 hours of input that went into that session. Where are the proposals? Where's the 24-hour bathroom plan? Where's the plan for a safe haven campground? All of us were wondering that should show up at 7 o'clock at the oral communications period. And also, there are a whole fleet of trials continuing to hit the courts. Dan Hopkins' trial resumes May 30th. Pat Ring's trial resumes in June. Sandria Roth's trial takes off in May. And indeed, Mooncat's trial will be going on April 25th, this Friday. Mooncat is a local supporter of activists, an activist himself to some extent, who was present supporting the City Hall sleepers last year. And he faces misdemeanor sleeping charges. You sleep twice within 48 hours, according to the Rodkin-Matthews law, and you get up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine, plus whatever other jail they decide to give you until they release you to go to court. And Mooncat was arrested back in, I think it was April, May, or June of last year under that, as were half a dozen to a dozen other people. No such case has ever seen the light of day in court, and indeed Sandria Roth's misdemeanor sleeping charge was dropped to an infraction over her objection at a recent court hearing, and she will be denied a jury trial, she will be denied a public defender, and the charge, in fact, has completely disappeared. They dismissed the charge after sentencing her to $162 a charge on 12 other charges. So she's got to find a deep pocket to deal with those fines, or else get ready to spend community service till she's old and gray. All this for the crime of sleeping in front of City Hall in support of the rights of homeless people. Sandry and I have been talking about setting up a FIJA table, as I've mentioned in the past. FIJA is the Fully Informed Jury Amendment and Association, which is a group concerned with the rights of jurors, the rights of the public to know that if they are chosen as jurors, they can just say no to unjust laws. So if you are in a drug war case, and they've proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that indeed it was Gina who had that pound of marijuana, you can still say, not guilty. I'm sorry, I don't want someone to go to jail for that crime, regardless of what the law says. Because the jury is the ultimate guardian of the people's liberties here. The jury can say no. That's called jury nullification, and fully informed juries should know they have a right to do that. It's particularly important with homeless people in these upcoming sleep crime cases, because if you talk to a normal person on the street, rather than a district attorney, a city attorney, or a cop, or a city council member, they would look at you if you told them that it was illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night, even though there were less than 30 sleeping spaces for more than 750 people, and the rest of them have to go illegal. They would look at you as though you were crazy, or bizarrely cruel. And that's the general response of the public when we circulate petitions trying to change the law. But, of course, it's not the response of the city council, whose constituency is somewhat different. West Side and the merchants are their constituents, and they indeed do their bidding. We have a whole set of downtown ordinances in place, thanks to those merchants, where people like Scott Kennedy simply sandbagged their own consciences and passed laws that made it illegal for people, for example, to peacefully ask for spare change after dark. I think Kennedy had the rationale that if the laws would be found unconstitutional in the courts if necessary, and that he wanted to preserve the merchant city council alliance that had developed since the earthquake. This according to researcher Celine Pascal, who did an extensive series of interviews with the city council members back in 1994 when they passed these anti-homeless laws. And what we have in 1997 now is a series of repeats in other cities, which we're going to talk about in the hour or so ahead. But you can come to City Council on Tuesday night at April 22nd, and you can support the chain gang lockdown, folks. That's seven brave people who stood up at City Council. Some of them chained themselves to furniture, and others in the audience shouted, "Homes, not jails," for a brief period of time. 2 or 3 minutes was essentially the length of the demonstration at most. Actually, I think it was almost less than 2 minutes, at which point the demonstration ended when Rotkin recessed the council. The police unchained the people who were chained with bolt cutters, failing to use the keys, apparently, that some of the protesters had. And then The whole thing proceeded. This is back on September 10th. The council resumed its deliberations, such as they were, about an hour and a half later. They're very, very skittish about demonstrations, particularly on issues where their consciences have been, shall we say, pawned out. So you can come on the 7 o'clock session and speak your mind on this. I think it's important that we get more and more people to do this. Particularly on this occasion, it's being led by some of the folks who are the chain gang people looking for support again. And who knows, there may even be another demonstration of some kind. It's not beyond possibility. But there are four other cities, as I said before, where there's an immediate crunch coming up on homeless rights issues. Santa Barbara, Mountain View, San Jose, and Palo Alto. In Palo Alto on Thursday, the 24th, the anti-homeless sit on the sidewalk, go to jail law, inspired by Seattle and Santa Cruz, will go into effect. And on that day, There's going to be demonstrations organized not by the mastermind of Santa Cruz, yours truly, not by evil Food Not Bombs people in San Francisco or out-of-town activists in Berkeley, but organized by Palo Alto residents, a merchant or two, civil rights activists, social service providers, and homeless people. They are concerned it should not be illegal to sit down on the 10-block area of University Avenue, which will become illegal on April 24th. And they intend to gather at the Palo Alto City Hall at 7 and then march at 8 o'clock to, or amble or walk, to the University Avenue and sit down. Now, this could be, of course, the cause for some congestion of traffic and publicity and even arrests, were it not for the fact that the people who are leading this are very genteel types, and according to my information, they've worked out a deal with the cops so that there will be no arrests. Police will rationalize by saying, we're giving people a 2 or 3 or 4 week hiatus here to learn about this wonderful new law. And so it's going to be largely symbolic. Nonetheless, I'm going to support this. I'm going to take a car full of people up from the town clock, leaving at 5 o'clock on April 24th. That's Thursday. And if you have a car or you want to go, please give me a call or show up there. My number is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And I'll try and reserve a place for you on the roof, in the trunk, whatever, in the back seat. And, hey, try and get some cars of your own, friends who have vehicles. We'd suggest you bike up there if you're of a mind, but it's quite a ways. And support the folks in Palo Alto who are trying to show the Palo Alto City Council that there is still a real groundswell of opposition to this measure. The other cities being focused on in this particular broadcast are Santa Barbara, San Jose, and Mountain View. And the reason I'm focusing on them is because they, during the same month period, have laws coming up. Actually, Santa Barbara's comes up for a second reading on Tuesday. So does San Jose's, and Mountain View's comes up for a second reading a week from Tuesday. These are laws that make it illegal to sit or that make it illegal to hold up a sign. I'm going to talk more about these cities. But first, let's hear a little of the Palo Alto debate. The Palo Alto debate on its sit-down-go-to-jail law, or sit-down-get-a-citation law, whatever, because if you're a homeless person and you get a citation and you don't deal with it, you go to jail anyway. So it's nice of them to say we're being compassionate, but jail seems to be the solution and the club that the merchants are using to drive away folks that they would prefer not to have around their glitzy shops. But here's very high caliber debate you're going to be hearing in the Palo Alto City Council. Unfortunately, it's all pretty much all on one side because there's no substance on the other side. This Palo Alto law was proposed as a trip and fall protection. That is to say, they didn't want to even say they were dealing with panhandlers. They wanted to say they were dealing with obstructions on the sidewalk. But, of course, the obstructions on the sidewalk that are really there are the tables and chairs of merchants and the displays of merchants. There's actually not that many homeless people in Palo Alto sitting down. There are a few with signs. But so determined are the Palo Alto merchants to get rid of these so-called eyesores that they are completely rewriting what's going on up there, and they're presenting it in a hypocritically mislabeled package about a public safety issue. Anyway, you're going to hear some of this debate from January. There are actually four long hearings. I was at two of them where the issue was aired, and I was very impressed with the quality of the debate, and I think you will be too. This is the January City Council in Palo Alto speaking on the issue of the sit-lie law, as we call it, or the sit-lie-lie, as the homeless flyer up there has it. So now let's hear what the Palo Alto City Council, City Attorney, and public had to say about their sit-lie law. We're going to go back to January of this year, and we're going to hear now the City Attorney discussing the sit-lie law, followed by, I guess there's a police report, and then there's the city public talking about it. And it's a little hard to hear, but it's worth listening to. So turn up your radios if you can't hear it, and turn on your hearing aids, turn down the rock music. Here's the Palo Alto City Council making it illegal for people to sit down on University Avenue, beginning with the city attorney.
Under these exemptions, the speech exemption is that the issue that was put in there. it raises just exactly how difficult it's going to be to figure out when and if sitting or lying down is necessary to communicate. I think we're going to see the possibility of people trying to test the ordinance, sitting down with signs and saying, "I'm sitting down to test the ordinance." There are any number of examples that are very tough to figure out. So the roulette example of seeing keyboards is just the beginning. One of the legal issues that relates to these sorts of First Amendment concerns is what's called overbreath, and that is when the ordinance potentially forbids behavior beyond what it's supposed to be forbidding, that kind of ordinance can have a chilling effect on other people's speaking. In other words, if there is some behavior or speech conduct that the ordinance legitimately forbids, but if the ordinance is written in a way that people can't tell whether some other legal behavior is also forbidden, you've got an overbreath problem because the ordinance would effectively censor people who could otherwise speak for fear of being prosecuted. I think we overcome that kind of concern with this ordinance with the required police notice or warning. Keep in mind that the penalty is an infraction, but the ordinance specifically requires a police officer to let someone know that they are violating the ordinance, and then before they are able to issue a citation. So it's not a situation where someone sitting in one of these exemption areas would have to guess as to whether or not they are at risk of prosecution. If they are at risk of prosecution, they are required by law to give a warning, and then they can make their choice from there. A real concern in the ordinance, I want to be very direct about it, I don't think it's appropriate that we duck it. A real concern is figuring out this language about speech or conduct that is protected under the First Amendment and for which sitting and lying down is necessary. I think that's going to be a tough one to understand in all instances. As I mentioned, the roulette case talked about a seat keyboardist. There are probably a myriad of examples. I think we're going to have to fill that out with police general orders to give some guidelines. I'm not really prepared to play a what-if game with members of the public or really even counsel as to what constitutes this kind of speech. That may well say something about this exemption approach, and we'll come to that in a minute. Another significant issue that's come up and is what's going to be the impact of these seated speech areas on these specific locations. We're not operating in the back end, but the sidewalks are lined not only by street, but by businesses and other interests as well. And one of the concerns about defining three areas would be potentially a concentration of activities or possibly a dispersal. I don't know, but certainly that's an issue to think about. What are some of the alternatives to this exemption approach that we've identified? Certainly, you could relocate the exemption areas if any one or more than one city hall has got the authority, I believe, to relocate them. I think you could eliminate some or all of them, and I'll explain in a minute why they're important. But I think the council does have some latitude to alter those exemption areas. There's nothing magic about the number three, nor is there really anything magic about their location. It's also, I think, possible for the council to drop this seated speech integration language, the bit about sitting or lying down only when it's necessary to convey your message. That could be difficult to enforce, difficult to apply. You could simply exempt sitting and lying down in certain locations. Another alternative would be to go back to the permit system. As I've gone into in the staff report, permit system is a prior restraint. It's a form of censorship, very heavily disfavored. We don't think we have the volume to warrant that, and we're really strong for not to do it. Okay, what are the legal standards we're dealing with? I think that this prohibition on sitting or lying down on the sidewalk is what we call a time, place, and manner restriction. And that is not censorship of speech, but rules about when you can do it, where you can do it, and how you can do it. That's assuming that we get past this initial hurdle and we equate sitting and lying down with communication. Okay. The courts have said that you can do these time, place, and manner restrictions if they're content neutral. I'll that. And second, if they're narrowly tailored to serve a significant governmental interest. That last piece is important. The courts have consistently said that regulating the use of the sidewalks, free flow of pedestrians on the sidewalks, safety on the sidewalks and in the streets constitutes a significant government interest. Finally, and this is the issue that really ties back into our exemption areas, the regulation needs to leave open ample alternatives for communication, meaning you can't completely proscribe speech, be a pretty obvious First Amendment problem. If you do regulate time, place, and manner of speech, you need to have alternatives available that allow the speakers to reach their intended audience. Finally, the regulations need to avoid the overbreadth and vagueness problems. What are we talking about with content neutrality? And I want to focus on this so that we get a pretty clear sense of why I feel comfortable with this ordinance. First of all, the Supreme Court said that the government in this case, the city's purpose is a controlling consideration. Do you have the intent to regulate the content of a specific kind of speech? Are you trying to suppress Democrat speech in favor of Republican speech? That would be a classic content-based restriction that would violate the First Amendment. So what is your purpose here? Well, we looked at the legislative intent purposes. We're dealing here again with the sidewalk obstruction and congestion. The court's gone on to say that they're going to be particularly focused when you are adopting a regulation because of disagreement with the message that's being spoken. And I don't see that anywhere in this record. Sitting and lying down, if indeed it has any communicative value at all, it's not associated with a particular message. It's certainly not informal. People sit or lie down for lots of different reasons, and I think that's important to keep in mind. Secondly, it's okay to have some incidental effect on speech. Courts recognize that time, place, and manner restrictions might have an impact on some speakers. A classic example, or neoclassic example, I guess, of the time, place, and manner restriction would be the adult theater restrictions. Certainly those regulations are focused on a particular kind of speech. But the court said, wait a minute, the city here is not regulating that speech because of its content. It's regulating it because of the secondary effects on the rest of the community. The effects that an adult bookstore would have on a downtown core. That's precisely what I think is going on sitting in line down, even if it is speech. The city council, at least thus far and in this record, the staff have no interest in what these folks are trying to say. It's the secondary effect of blocking pedestrian traffic that is the concern. And finally, the regulation needs to be justified without a reference to the content, and that's certainly where we are. Okay, narrowly tailored to serve this interest in protecting the sidewalks. We were concerned for a long time that narrowly tailored meant the least restrictive way to do it, meaning that if anyone could find some easier or less intrusive way to regulate to preserve the sidewalks, such as sit-by versus actual obstruction, we were concerned that if there appeared to be a less intrusive alternative that impacted First Amendment rights less, that you'd be stuck with it or forced to do it. The Supreme Court a few years ago said, no, that's not the case. Our burden, the city's burden, is to show that our interest in sidewalk congestion and avoiding trip hazards would be achieved less effectively without this regulation. And I think on this record, we can meet that standard. Finally, the ample alternative channels of communication. What are we talking about? Let's assume that city and wind down is speech. Let's assume that the city council by this ordinance forbids that kind of speech as an incidental effect of forbidding sitting in line down. What are the alternatives? How are we really impacting people? Well, there's an exemption for all the benches on University Avenue. As of this afternoon, I understand we're talking about 140 linear feet. That would seat almost 50 people in a 7-block area. Is that an ample alternative channel? I think so. It's up to the council to decide. All the side streets intersecting the university are not covered by this regulation. Why is that important? Remember that this alternative channel has to allow people to reach their intended audience. Well, the fact is that most of the parking used by folks who patronize like University Avenue, which comes from one of the side areas. So people coming to the business on the university, the vast majority of them, need to traverse one of the side streets in the university. And again, folks who need to sit in line to communicate, indeed, that is communication, will have access to that audience on any one of the side streets from California High Street. Litton Plaza itself, not the sidewalk in front of it, but Litton Plaza itself is dedicated park. And this ordinance does nothing to stop communication there. Finally, the seated speech exemption, if the council chooses to go that route, also provides an alternative. And standing up, not trying to compute here, but again, there's nothing to stop anyone from communicating any message while standing up.
And that was the city attorney of Palo Alto giving a lengthy rationale for the sit-lie law, which was later passed with only one exemption. Litton Plaza is legal to sit in. Elsewhere, it's completely illegal along the 10-block area of University Avenue. We're going to skip the city council discussion, first because it's hard to hear, and second because it's really a sad example of a city council trying to tailor itself. They're both catering to the liberals in the town and at the same time passing the merchant agenda with a liberal bows and ribbons. So I'm going to skip the police testimony, which was actually amazing that there were no instances of claims or reports of tripping and falling, which is the primary justification for the Palo Alto law. I did play you that long city attorney bit because I think that you need to hear what the other side has to say. And I also interviewed the city attorney during a break. I brought up the name of Bob Myers, who was the city attorney of Santa Monica, who refused to draft anti-homeless laws, specifically laws against sleeping and against feeding homeless people. And as a consequence, he was fired eventually, although he held the line for a number of years because there's a peculiarity in Santa Monica that does not allow you to fire the city attorney unless you have a super majority. You have to have not quite two-thirds, maybe three-fifths, I'm not sure. And so he stayed on and blocked the city's attempt to put into effect anti-homeless legislation, which they later did after he was fired. But here's the Palo Alto city attorney trying to justify himself, sort of a sad situation for a liberal person. Indeed, this is what many of these council members did, and I think what many of our own city council members do.
Hey, we're speaking to, are you the city attorney?
Yeah, Ariel Cohen.
And you were saying that you had previously told the city something rather serious at its July session regarding an earlier version of this law?
What I said was in terms of the council's purpose and motive that if I felt that their intent was to eradicate any particular group from the city, I'd be forced to withdraw from employment as an ethical matter.
That's... I wish our city attorney had that kind of position. I just came from a conference in Los Angeles where Bob Myers spoke about his successfully holding back anti-homeless laws for about half a decade. You seriously don't feel this is targeting homeless people?
I really don't. You have to take a look at the way the police have handled it here. It will really be enforcement, I believe, only when we've got huge crowds downtown. The nighttime traffic is what's really driving it. We have a lot of the night scene now, and we get young people and others out there drinking and big crowds queuing up around street performers. I don't really think the major interest people have is in people sitting down with a placard, you know, begging. And there's plenty of space for them on the benches now. So I really think what the concern is the big night crowds.
Well, I noticed the earlier version of this law only went till 7 o'clock in the evening.
It went from 7 in the morning to 11 at night.
Oh, I see. So I misread that.
Yeah, we cut it back to make it 11 a.m. to 11 p.m.
What significant changes have happened since you first saw this law in July?
Just trying to write in the exemption for seated or lying down speech so that we have some areas where people can sit down and do their thing. Separate from the benches, and that's what's happened is we've gotten business opposition to those three areas I identified, and we'll see what the council does with it.
Now, Palo Alto has a number of sort of downtown areas, right? This seven-block university area, is that what we're talking about?
Right.
Isn't the only area where there's a lot of congestion. Why focus on this area?
Well, it is the only area that's gotten so so big and successful. The approach has been, really, from my standpoint, surprisingly laissez-faire. They really don't want to regulate unless they absolutely have to. I've been talking to the council for 2 years about the downtown nightlife and what are you going to do? Do you want to be concerned with it? And they really have said hands off to the greatest extent possible. So Cal Avenue is the other one, and there just isn't the traffic there to warrant it.
So you've actually, you've seen surveys that show differences in terms of the number of people, foot traffic per hour, or you've actually seen...
I don't have anything quantitative or empirical. It's just
that's your feeling when you go down to these areas?
Oh, yeah.
And you've been living here for...
7 years.
Well, obviously, a lot of us in the audience are concerned that this is going to be used selectively, particularly with the warning provision, which was found unconstitutional in Santa Cruz. You know about that. What's your sense of that?
I don't think there really is the opportunity to use it selectively. We're not talking about more. The police testimony last time was we're talking about 15, 20 people sitting on the sidewalks, maximum ever. So we're not talking about a huge number of people. I think if there's anything selective, it's going to be about time of day, that at night when there are big crowds, the police are more likely to want to enforce this than during the day when there's nobody around. So that's the way I think it'll go down.
Why not frame the law in terms of when there are huge crowds present?
We had the council direct us to look at that, and the council may go that route. I framed an alternative to sit lie as this actual obstruction. The reason I don't like it is that I think that's the one that causes conflict with the cops, where they have to decide you're blocking the sidewalk, but you're not. I think that's the worse alternative than just having a narrow area. And, you know, I compare this to Berkeley, Seattle banned it in entire commercial districts. You know, we're talking about, this is the street frontage on University is for 7 blocks. It's as narrow as we could ride it and address the crowd situation.
So it is, see, obviously in Berkeley and Seattle, it has nothing to do with the crowd situation. It's a straight anti-homeless law. That's how
I won't comment.
That's how I feel about it, and I think many other people agree with me.
Well, we want to avoid that. We want to avoid that perception because it's, again, the thing that I'm proud of here is something I really have nothing to do with. Our police are really fine humans, and they're very professional. So
have you had much contact with homeless people yourself? I've been hearing stories of police kind of preempting the situation by harassing people even prior to the institution of this law. You haven't talked to people who've come to you with that concern?
The only people I see are the regulars down by the bagel shop. So.
Not the guy that was dumped for trying to retrieve his stuff when the council member walked by? Or.
I didn't watch that situation. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I don't either. I talked to an employee who saw what happened, but I don't actually have direct knowledge myself.
Apparently, he had some property sitting on some property or some garbage, depending on which side of the story you ask. And they
one man's property is
altercation. Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you that I think your analysis of an attempt to explain the different aspects of the law, though I regard your language as saying you want to avoid the perception that this is an anti-homeless law as really the key phrase, because I think it is an anti-homeless law, and I don't think so. I think that you're put in a difficult position here. You're trying to make it as content neutral as possible and not merely set up a situation where you're also trying to make it impregnable to court challenge, obviously, because that's your job, right?
Yeah, I can't say much about how I feel personally, but let me say that I respect Bob Myers very much, and I'm not afraid to back up what I feel is right legally with my
personal action.
Yeah.
Spell your last name for me.
It's Callonne, C-A-L-O-N-N-E.
Well, I appreciate that. Anything you want to add? Do we have any other laws coming down the pike that'll eliminate panhandling and so forth?
Yeah, we have a direction to look at something like that, but the Human Relations Commission here has been very active. What I have to add is that I think the best part of what I've seen here is the participation, And I think it keeps the council really pinching itself and honest. So the part of this that's refreshing to me is that I think everybody's being very straight about it. There may be ultimate disagreements, but thus far I think it all has a feel of being very live and very real, and I think the public needs to do that. I say a lot of times, if you want to make sure we screw something up at City Hall, leave us to do it alone. You know, I think people really have to get in the council's face on issues that matter, or else they just don't know.
Have there been much merchant pressure that you're aware of to institute this law?
There's been a lot of communication with the council. I've been completely isolated from it. So, I think there's very strong business support for this. I'm not sure they understand what it's going to do or what it's not going to do, but there's strong merchant support.
And would you agree that the merchant support is probably not concerned with older people tripping on folks on the avenue, but rather that they feel that people who are homeless are a detriment to their business downtown?
I don't know. No, I tell you, the testimony that they gave was that they get complaints from customers coming into their store, you know, that I stumbled over this person, or that I couldn't get into the store. So it's been customer-driven complaints. That's about as specific as I could say.
Has it been class-driven customer complaints? Because that is the constant refrain you hear, at least from merchants in Santa Cruz and Berkeley, that it's these bums who are driving away the business.
If that's that's not what I've heard, and if that's the complaint...
That's not what you've heard.
No, and if that's the complaint that's being made, you have to weigh that against the tax revenue and sales growth downtown here. If that's what's going on, you're certainly not seeing it from an economic standpoint. One of the things you notice in this ordinance is we're not suggesting economic reasons to justify it. This is not set up as a let's protect the free market and... preserve downtown vitality. This is set up as we've got an abundance of downtown vitality. We need to...
Public safety.
And you are listening to City Attorney from Palo Alto speaking to me in January. We switch now to the final hearings of the Palo Alto City Council on the Sitlai Ordinance, and you'll hear a collection of opponents and proponents. Here they are.
Good evening, council members. My name is Mark Sagan. Living at 4274 Wilkie Way in Palo Alto. I was here also on the 21st, and one thing that interests me is the amount that 85% of the elderly supported this ordinance. Now, myself being disabled, I can really relate to that. Fortunately, I had major surgery that mitigated my disability. But before that, my mobility was compromised. And I believe that 85% supports it because they look at situations like the university as it is and as it's getting, and they choose to deal with it by not coming there. And frankly, I don't think that's right. When a person's mobility is compromised, it's not just a matter that they move slowly, but when they come upon sudden bottlenecks and people come together quickly, it's a very real possibility that if they get jostled, they fall over. And if you're elderly and you suffer from things like osteoporosis, the possibility or the ramifications of falling over are on a sidewalk are serious. In terms of, there's been an argument proposed that, well, there hasn't really been a situation where something's happened, therefore this isn't needed. You know, it seems reasonable and prudent that the city can adopt ordinances that can prevent something like this from happening. We don't zone a neighborhood residential after people complain that the 24-hour car wash is keeping them up all night. We don't do those. So we do think we can, and we are capable of passing ordinances that prevent problems rather than dealing with them reactively. I think this is a situation that is not only reasonable, it is prudent for these reasons. I think it's important that University Avenue be open and be attractive for everybody in the community. I think everybody in the community should be willing and able to try to accommodate and try to think of everybody else's concerns in this community. I think this is a good ordinance. I think it's needed, and I urge your support for it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sabin.
My name is Michael Schwartz. I live at 110 Pasito Terrace.
Use the mic, please. Get a little closer. Thank you.
I live at 110 Pasito Terrace in Sunnyvale. And I'm speaking to this issue because I am a frequent... I frequently come to Palo Alto, and I'm familiar with the areas that have been mentioned here. And I would like to talk about this sit-lie law by taking a very slight detour to go back to what another person brought up at the first hearing about this ordinance when he mentioned fascism. And it was Mr. Fazzino on your staff that said that it was trivializing fascism to talk about treating the homeless in this kind of way. And I would like to say, remind Mr. Fazzino that he is trivializing the reality that is happening in front of our noses every day. And that reality is a day-by-day change in what is happening with the reduced access to authority from people of the underclass. And I would like to quote briefly a book that has been out for a number of years called Friendly Fascism by Bertram Gross. And he says, as I survey the entire panorama of contending forces, I can readily detect something more important, the outline of a powerful logic of events. This logic points toward tighter integration of every first world establishment. In the United States, it points toward more concentrated, unscrupulous, repressive, and militaristic control by a big business, big government partnership that to preserve the privileges of the ultra-rich, the corporate overseers, and the brass in the military and the civilian order squelches the rights and liberties of other people both at home and abroad. That is friendly fascism. Thus it was in Italy, Japan, and Germany when the classic fascists came to power. The crisis of depression, inflation, and class conflict provided an ideal opportunity for the cartels, warmongers, right-wing extremists, and so on to rush toward power. The fascist response was not worked out by some central cabal of secret conspirators, nor was it a random or accidental development. The dominant logic of the situation prevailed. Although the friendly I'm skipping down a little bit here, and in order to withdraw from the quotation, I'm taking the liberty to do a little bit of paraphrasing because the author does not encourage a one paragraph or a one sentence review of his whole book. But the substance is, although the friendly fascism are subversive elements, they rarely see themselves as such. Some are merely out to make money under conditions of stagflation. Some are merely concerned with keeping or expanding their power and privileges. Many use the rhetoric of freedom, liberty, democracy, human values, or even human rights in pursuing their mutual interests through a new coalition of concentrated oligarchic power. People may be hurt, whether through pollution, shortages, unemployment, inflation, or war. But that is not part of their central purpose. It is just a byproduct. The reason I'm bringing this up is that I see a gradual change in the way things are being done in our society. The police have often told me when I've been stopped for a traffic violation or something like that, well, we don't make the laws, we just enforce them. But I see a very heavy legal police presence in determining what safety is here and what is a suitable law for obstruction of the people. And I feel it is just a byproduct. The reason I'm bringing this up is that I see a gradual change in the way things are being done in our society. The police have often told me when I've been stopped for a traffic violation or something like that, well, we don't make the laws, we just enforce them. But I see a very heavy legal police presence in determining what safety is here and what is a suitable law for obstruction of the people, and I feel it's part of a new world order to have this police here, and I would please want you to not vote for this.
Hi all, my name is Michael Mahan. Some of you know me, some of you don't. These two police officers here know me from living on the street. Hi Sandra, hi Derek. I'm against your ordinance. I'm a veteran. I'm homeless. If I don't have any money to eat, no money to wash my clothes, I'm going to fly my sign saying, I need some work, you know, or I need some help. If y'all ain't going to help us, who is? How would you like us to pass a law that says you can't drive your BMW or your Mercedes down University Avenue on certain hours of the day? Huh? That's all I got to say. Thank you all very much.
Good evening. I'm Herb Barr, 2731 Byron Street. Ron, where are that was the most concise I ever was. Thank you, Vice Mayor Anderson. The council has given the city attorney a very difficult job to do. The city attorney has an ethical and professional responsibility to try to implement the policy decisions that you make, and you have asked him to prepare this draft ordinance. And the difficulty is that he's had to, in order to implement the direction of the council, he's had to ignore the remarks in the record of your meeting of July 8th, 1996, at pages 79-390 and 391 of Councilmember McCown, where she pointed out that there was a lack of evidence and facts in the record. And those of us who attended the last meeting on January 21st, 1997, also noticed a lack of evidence and facts supporting this proposal. Councilmember McCown's remarks are important because they appear in the record after the remarks of Chief Durkin, which the city attorney has relied upon as evidence supporting the draft ordinance. This particular proposal is related to the kinds of decisions the council usually makes, which are decisions on land use. The city council over the years, in decades in fact, has chosen a strategy of urban development in our business districts. And while we're pursuing that type of development, some people would like us in those business districts to have the people who are in the districts look like the people look on the business district of Los Altos. That's not going to happen with this development strategy. As you've found in a number of situations, both with this ordinance and with the situations of parking in residential neighborhoods surrounding the University Avenue Business District and the California Avenue Business District, there is a price to pay for this kind of development strategy. And there just isn't enough money around in the city to alleviate these symptoms by having this strategy throughout the city. Yet, unfortunately, that seems to be the policy you'd be heading towards if you take a look at the draft comprehensive plan that will be coming before you shortly. The intent is to intensify development in the commercial areas of primarily three areas in South Palo Alto by giving them a fancy name called Urban Village. But if you analyze those situations, essentially you're going to start running into the same problems. The problems of parking will be immediate, but the kinds of problems that you're facing this evening, you're going to be your successors down the road will be facing in these other areas if you follow that policy. You're going to have to find solutions to the problems of living in an urban area that are starting to crop up in University Avenue and will probably be down the road not too far in California Avenue before you try to implement the same kinds of policies in other parts of Palo Alto. The direction that you've given the city attorney is to create an ordinance which is essentially against a particular group of people, and that's why you have an ordinance against sitting and lying on the sidewalk rather than against the people who do most of the obstruction of pedestrian traffic in Palo Alto on University Avenue, which are large crowds waiting to get into popular restaurants, or people walking in one direction of the sidewalk who believe their entire group is entitled to the entire sidewalk, regardless of who it is that's walking in the opposite direction. It seems to me that the comments of Vice Mayor Anderson and of Councilmember McCown in the meeting of July 8, 1996 are both well taken. It's inappropriate and unconstitutional, and also there are no facts or evidence to support this proposal. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Perugio Bluda. I live on Upper Page Mill Road in Palo Alto. I'm pleased to be a member of a small collective called Food Not Bombs that has been serving free vegan meals twice a week here for a year and a quarter. I bring that up largely to tell you that I am out there on the street a lot, and I think that what I'm going to say is at least factually accurate. I also am a member of the Task Force on Homelessness that was appointed by the Human Relations Commission of the city, and I was formerly the coordinator of the Peace and Justice Center. I come to speak for myself, but I bring all of this up to call your attention to the fact that there has been an outpouring of people speaking against this ordinance every time that it's come up, starting last July. I hope you were listening to the kind of people that are coming up and speaking to you about it. Many of them are homeless and speaking very eloquently about their problems, but many of us are ordinary people who just feel that our business in life is best directed toward trying to help our brothers and sisters who are having problems rather than to harass them or to drive them out of our vision. Now, one of my besetting sins is that I'm a terrible procrastinator, and from time to time when I procrastinate and don't do something, I excuse it to myself by looking and saying, well, nothing bad happened, so maybe it wasn't necessary that I did it. So I congratulate you. Last July you started on this ordinance and you procrastinated. And did anything disastrous happen? No, nobody fell over anybody. It's been an ephemeral. There is no problem, and yet we're spending an enormous amount of attention about the homeless problem, which is one of the massive problems dividing our society, trying to figure out whether it's sensible or reasonable or constitutional to pass an ordinance that's clearly designed to drive the poorest of the poor off University Avenue so they won't interfere with the tourist business or the restaurant business or cause us any problems in our heart when we walk down the street and see that there are people who really have no place to live. Now, unfortunately, you've procrastinated about everything else, too. For the last 3 years, I haven't seen any changes. 5 more beds for the 150 homeless in 3 years. You appointed a task force. We spent many, many hours coming up with a set of recommendations that's been sitting around for 4 months already. Nothing has been done about it. except for one positive thing. People like David Martin of the Human Relations Commission and Walt London of Urban Ministry pushed through a little plan to hire 8 people for $8 an hour for half-time work. They had a take-home pay of $150, and although a lot of us thought that was so low, it was foolish, we said at least it's a step in the right direction. You spent the $26,000 you had off in some little corner, and when it came Christmas time, you had to scrape up another week so you wouldn't fire those people at Christmas. Instead, they got dropped in the first week in January. 3 of those 8 were offered temporary jobs that may or may not work out. The other 5 I know. These were people that were feeling filled with themselves and finding some hope, and suddenly that job has disappeared. It's time to stop being so parsimonious about what you spend. And the truth is that Palo Alto is. You don't spend a penny out of my property taxes or anybody else's. You divert $60,000 out of a federal grant to the homeless every year. It's a pittance for the amount of work that is necessary. The task force came up with a series of suggestions that are all sensible and easy. What do the homeless need? They need a place to live, a place to sleep at least for the night. How much longer are you going to just sit around and look at that without getting attached to what an ordinary group of 10 citizens recommended to them that you might do? How much more energy are you going to spend trying to decide whether to pass this shameful ordinance that's obviously not needed and is even the supporters say it's for the police to have the power in case they need to use it. There's a law that says if I sit down and obstruct the traffic, you can arrest me already. I've heard people say the police shouldn't be required to use that kind of judgment. Well, they've got to use that kind of judgment. It's not okay to say you cannot sit there. It's totally foolish, and it's going to cost far more than the $20,000 to $50,000 that the city attorney guessed in January it might cost, because there will be a civil disobedience test of it, undoubtedly. It's going to go down to a long court battle. It's going to set up a situation in which the ordinary people feel like we've got to get into politics and vote some of the people out of office that have been on this wrong path. Some of you are not just on the wrong path, it seems to me you're lost out in the swamp. Okay, it's time to get on to the positive thing and forget that ordinance.
My name is Daniel Day. I am one of the many homeless people that this order or this ordinance is going to affect. I have a question. Everybody up there listening says, mate, it's not going to change anything. We should have to eat. We should have to sleep. We should have to earn money. So all this ordinance is going to do is cause the city $25,000, $50,000that Joe can better spend someplace else. Because it's not going to change a thing. We're all intelligent people here. Why are we trying to push something that's a waste of time? All this is on paper. They say the police need a tool. What do they need a tool for? They have their training, their education, and the powers to do what they need to do to enforce the laws. This is not a law. This is a BS game somebody came up with, because it makes no sense to anybody. Because what you say we can't do, what you say we shouldn't do, is what we need to do to survive in this city, in this country. So all I'm asking you is be intelligent enough to say, the ordinance is wrong. You passed the ordinance against drinking on the street, that was agreeable. You passed the ordinance against panhandling and city park lots, that was agreeable. Because we all agree to that. But sitting around on the sidewalk, if I'm tired, after carrying 60 pounds, 80 pounds on my back all day long, I'm going to sleep. Whether it's on University Avenue, California Avenue, or Emerson or Calvert. Because I have to sleep just like y'all do. And so do the rest of us homeless out here. So let's use a little common sense. Use the intelligence that God gave us all. Ordinance is no good. It won't work. It never will work. Because if you pass it, you have to enforce it. It's going to cost the city money. That money can be better used someplace else. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Day. Stephen Player. I'm an attorney here in Palo Alto. My offices are on 2600 El Camino Real. I'm here to speak in support of the city law ban. I think we've gone at every end of the spectrum this evening, and I think we're losing a little bit of sight on what this ordinance really is all about. It's really about an ordinance which is designed to assist in a very limited area of the downtown, the area which your staff and your police have said is the most obstructive, the most dangerous in terms of pedestrian traffic in the entire downtown area. It's there to serve not only the users of the downtown, but all the citizens of the downtown. This is not an ordinance that says it's not safe for certain people and it's safe for other people. This is to provide a safe place for all the users of the downtown, whether homeless, merchants, businessmen, what have you. This is a very limited, focused effort to try to take the first step in giving to your police and your authorities the opportunity to deal with the problems they've come before you and said is a very real problem. Your city attorney has presented a very well-reasoned argument for a cautious approach to an ordinance that he believes will be sustainable in a court of law. This is a case where you are really representing not only the downtown area, but we have an entire community here of very diversified citizens who are concerned about the downtown and concerned about what it takes to come down and what might they might be exposed to when they come to the downtown area. In particular, the elderly which live in the downtown area at Lytton Gardens at to come to use the senior citizens who had trouble with individual talked earlier about the difficulty of mobility, the importance of having a safe place to walk where they are not being faced with an obstruction. This ordinance addresses those kind of issues. It doesn't in any way lessen the commitment of this council or this community to the problems which the homeless have put before you tonight. I don't see anything in the ordinance that says we as a community are less committed to dealing with those kind of problems. That is not an issue that this ordinance addresses. This is a safety issue. This is an issue which is going to lead to a better place for the entire users of the downtown. I'd like to get back and focus on those particular issues. I urge you to consider it, and I urge you to go forward tonight and adopt this ordinance as your staff has recommended. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Player.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Helen Person, and some of you may know me. I'm the manager of Condon & Chrome in downtown Palo Alto, and I see just about everything that goes around downtown because that's the big hub. I've heard a lot of talk tonight, and I'm not going to read anything. I'm just going to tell you a personal experience that I had about 3 or 4 years ago. This is on the record. About 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, a customer comes in and tells me that one of my people has been hit by a truck on Hamilton Avenue picking up the mail. He was very badly injured and subsequently died of his injuries. He was a wonderful man, a senior citizen. It's very hard for me. So when the subject of safety comes, I become very, very upset. I have had customers tell me that they can't walk downtown. The toddlers, I would feel bad if a toddler went in front of a car because they had an obstacle. A senior citizen that couldn't walk. And this is not 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. I've been on the street from 5:30 in the morning till, unfortunately, late at night. And I can tell you that after sunset, it is just as busy, if not busier, downtown than it is during the day. And when you cannot see what is going on and the cars are parked, if someone that was slow or small or couldn't see right, or there's just so many possibilities darting out in front of a car, I guarantee you that something is going to happen. I myself, I'm afraid to go at that light on University when it first turns green, because I know that those people are not going to stop for me. I've lived in this community for many years, and the traffic is getting worse, and there's more people on the street. We live in a community that is vibrant and active, and we are very fortunate that our downtown is a magnet for so many different types of people. I'm not going to discuss anything about anybody and what socioeconomic level they are on does not matter to me. The safety of everyone here, whether they're homeless, senior, children, I don't care. All I care about is I don't want to have to go out in front of the store and watch one of my employees or one of my customers or one of my friends get hurt. So if this is going to help, then I say let's try it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Person. What's your Dallenbach?
People are, many of us are speaking, trying to defend those of us in our community less fortunate than ourselves, but we're mainly doing it in terms of the difficulty that they themselves will experience if this ordinance is passed, and I think that's right and fine. But I also feel very saddened and upset about this because I myself actually find very real value in the fact that when I walk down the street, one thing I always do is I get organized enough to do the hurricane style of dispersion of wealth and make sure I have spare change in my purse that I can easily get to. And I actually value the chance to be able to hand out spare change as I see fit to people. And I usually don't question it too much. I always figure if somebody actually asks the question, I will actually try to respond in an open, anonymous manner. And if I have some spare change, they can have it. If you ask me for some spare change tonight, I'd probably give you folks spare change. So I came prepared for that. But I find value in having the economic diversity that we still have left in this community. I'm having a much easier time accepting the lower end of that economic diversity than I am at the higher end. I'm seeing this town change. I'm seeing conspicuous consumption on a level that I didn't think I'd ever live to see. I work right near the corner of Kingsley and Cowper, and there is a tent put up over a house that can be built in the middle of wintertime in this town instead of waiting until the end of the rainy season. And that tent costs $50,000, and that's a temporary structure. I have a lot harder time with that than I do of anybody sitting in line on University Avenue. If University Avenue is becoming just a little unwieldy, I would like to say that it's because of the whole ambiance of University Avenue, a place that I try not to go to anymore. Why would I want to? I mean, there's not that much there that I'm interested in. I also think, and I want to get a little more personal here for a second. I was in chambers, I think, the night when you folks discussed, and I was very happy that you decided to give our city attorney a low-cost loan, I think, to help him finance a house because he couldn't afford a house in this town. I think we're lucky to have Ariel as our city attorney. But I am struck that there is something ironic. He's not the only person. There's other people in city government, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I am struck that some of the people here tonight involved in this ordinance can't afford to live here unless they get help. And there are people in our community that can't afford to even live inside. And I don't think that this is any kind of the same spirit. So then it might come back kind of like this, like, well, but with some folks, they work for the city and we get something back. I'm saying I get something back. I get something back from these people that we're saying, I don't know, you get over to the Hamilton Avenue ghetto or go down to the California Avenue ghetto. You know, we want you off university because you're the problem. And I think that that's scapegoating, and I think that's dangerous. I think scapegoating has gone on throughout human history, and I do not think that it is an overstatement to say it's going on. I have read in the paper letters that were unbelievable, that were name-calling about bums and no-goods and riffraff. And I think it's really disgusting, and I think that as leaders in our community, you folks have a place. Whether or not you pass this ordinance, I hope like hell you don't, but if you do, I still think you have a place to speak up and try to speak to, I think, the fear and the marginalization that is taking place in part because of this discussion that's going on. I was really struck. I think the police brought up an example, or maybe somebody from the audience at the last meeting, about some guys walking down the street in university and it's got a little girl, and the little girl got afraid simply because there was a homeless person sitting on the sidewalk and became afraid, and so his way of, daddy's way of solving it was going and approaching a policeman, can't you do something about this? And I was reminded of, I have an African-American friend whose father told me that he has been to places in the United States, mainly in the Midwest, where children become afraid of him simply because of the color of his skin. And it came to mind when I was hearing that story that isn't there a better response to that than going to a policeman? Isn't the better response of taking the child and possibly approaching the homeless person and saying, "Hi, what's going on?" I think for your own credibility and the good of this city, I'm hoping you'll step back from this, step away from it. Thank you.
I'm Paul Gilbert. I live at 785 Barron Avenue. I expect almost every significant thing that can be said about this proposed ordinance has been said. It's probably not productive at this point in the proceedings to iterate points that have already been made. I certainly don't want to bore you. I don't want to annoy you. I don't want to offend you. I certainly want to influence you. And I do want to be a witness to this issue. Thus, I'll be very brief and I'll be very direct. Before coming to this evening's meeting, I reviewed the proposed document, the ordinance, and the supporting documents, and I sat through my video copy of the proceedings of the January meeting when this issue was presented by the city staff. I was struck again as I watched that video by the thoroughness of the staff's preparation. I was struck by the craftsmanship which went into the development of the ordinance, designed to ensure that it would be defensible against any challenge against it. And I was struck again by the shallowness of the basis for the ordinance. It is offered as a remedy, at least a partial remedy, for a condition which might be a threat to public safety and to the free flow of pedestrian traffic in the most congested section of University Avenue. The city attorney stated that it was offered to avoid the risk of pedestrians tripping on persons sitting or lying on the sidewalk. Yet he cited no instances of any pedestrian having tripped on such a sitting or lying person. Nor did any other staff member, even when asked directly by members of council, were they able to state any instance of such a tripping. There were several embarrassingly strange statements to the effect that the fact that the speaker knew of no such instance did not rule out the possibility that such trippings over sitting or lying persons may have occurred. Surely that's obvious. But it's only conjecture, which was necessary because of the absence of any evidence that persons sitting or lying on our sidewalks constitute such a risk. The second thrust of the ordinance is to eliminate obstructions to the free flow of pedestrian traffic. I want to be careful. I want to be circumspect in my statements. I began by stating that I do not wish to bore, annoy, or to offend you. Sincerely, I do wish to persuade you, if you need persuading, to vote against adoption of this proposed ordinance. I'm sure every person present in this room has walked on University Avenue. In my judgment, only the most credulous could accept the notion that persons sitting or lying on the sidewalks of that street constitute one of the several most egregious obstructions to the free flow of pedestrian traffic. Surely there are many, many things on that street which are much greater distractions to the pedestrian. Every effective window display, every attractive or well-dressed woman or man, every twinkling-eyed child, every tail-wagging dog is much more likely to attract and to hold the gaze of the unwary pedestrian than an unsightly person sitting on the sidewalk with a cup in his hand. Should we, as a city, be concerned to alleviate or remedy any situation which might in the future contribute to the injury of any person? Of course we should. But there has been no evidence offered that persons sitting or lying on our streets constitute such a threat. I don't know that there is any motive for the passage of this ordinance other than those stated: freedom from the risk of tripping and the assurance of unobstructed flow of pedestrian traffic. But my best efforts to understand and define do not find the stated arguments credible. I recognize that persons of intelligence and goodwill may and do disagree on many things. I have acquaintances whose intelligence and integrity I respect, who believe, nay, they're sure, that the position of the planets in relation to the earth at the moment of their birth influences their lives even today. I have no doubt that I have no idea what was going on in their heads in their first high school science class, but I simply can't get my head around
what they so comfortably believe. This ordinance is like that for me, a real disconnect between what others believe and what I simply cannot comprehend. Without doubting the intelligence or integrity of those who support this ordinance, I simply cannot find it supportable or understand how others can. I believe there are many, many others in this community who do not find it credible. I urge you to end this by defeating this proposal.
And that was some of the debate at the Palo Alto City Council last March, last month, after which the City Council did indeed pass by a 7-2 vote the sit-lie ban, which goes into effect on April 24th. And as I mentioned earlier, there's going to be a protest on that date, sponsored by actually a lot of liberals up there and some radicals, Food Not Bombs, a group called CALM, Citizens Against Legislated Meanness. I think the ACLU will probably be there. Certainly HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom in Santa Cruz, is lending its support. And hopefully folks from other communities as well, such as San Francisco, Berkeley, possibly even San Jose, the Community Homeless Alliance. So you're invited to come. Come to the town clock at 5 o'clock on Thursday the 24th. First, you can, of course, go to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless meeting if you want, then rush from that meeting, which starts at 4 at the Garfield Park Church, down to City Hall. I should not say City Hall, I'm sorry, the town clock, and we'll be taking off for Palo Alto. There may even be a late-night pickup leaving from the town clock at 6, since I believe board member Becky Johnson of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless is also going up to Palo Alto, and she'll be taking a station wagon full of people. If you want to go, you should contact 423-HUF and mention it, and we'll try and make sure there's a space for you. And if you have a car you want to contribute, certainly have that information put through to us as well. So, you're listening to Bathrob Spears Broadsides, and this is indeed 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, on your radio dial every Sunday at 11. You'll be listening to the Civil Rights for the Homeless show. Goes for an hour and a half or 2 hours. This week it's an hour and a half because I'm rushing to make the deadline. And we haven't talked much about San Jose, which actually is going to be voting for a second and final time on its anti-sitting law. And its law is actually much worse than Palo Alto's. Palo Alto's law bars sitting in a 10-block area along University Avenue, that is to say, along one street, whereas the San Jose law bars it within a 66-square-block area in the downtown, including, virtually every part of the downtown in that area, and excluding only the parks, St. James Park, the situation where you're sitting at a paid cafe or a bus stop. If you sit anywhere else, you are subject to, and here again, the San Jose law is much worse, a misdemeanor, which means jail and up to $1,000 fine for sitting down once, refusing to move when a cop tells you to move, even if you're not blocking the sidewalk, even if you're circulating a voter registration petition or some other petition. It's amazingly restrictive and hopefully will fall because of that challenge. And if you're interested in talking against this law, you can come to the San Jose City Council meeting. That's happening on Tuesday, the same day as our City Council meeting, only in the afternoon, so you can go to both. It's at 1:30 p.m., and that's in San Jose at 801 North 1st Street, 801 North 1st Street. And if you're really ambitious and want to hook up with other activists on that day, which is actually 2 days away from this broadcast, 2 days from now, you can contact Scott Wagers and Nancy Nichols, the head of the Community Homeless Alliance in San Jose, and leave them a message and tell them you're coming. And their phone number is 345-2353. They actually have a meeting with homeless people every Tuesday at 11 o'clock in the morning, and that happens at the First Christian Church on 80 North 5th Street, if you want to come down to that. That's the Community Homeless Alliance. They will probably be at that council meeting, possibly demonstrating at San Jose, on Tuesday, April 22nd, at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, down at City Hall, 801 North 1st Street. And they meet, as I said, the Community Homeless Alliance meets 2 or 3 hours earlier at 11 o'clock in the morning. So these are all possibilities. If you need any of these numbers or want more information, you can, of course, give me a call at 423-HUF, 423-4833. HUF is an acronym that stands for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the organization to which I belong. So I'm going to play you a little of what's happening in San Jose. They actually had what they consider, I suppose, a full-blown debate at the San Jose City Council 2 weeks ago. This second reading, honestly, is only sort of a pro forma matter. It's just for looks. It's they need to do a second reading of their ordinances according to their basic law, and they'll probably pass it, period, regardless of what you say or do. But the media will be there. You will be able to make your statement. And I don't think the issue is dead. This law is so harsh that the Community Homeless Alliance and other civil rights groups, I think, are going to protest this law. Indeed, the Community Homeless Alliance, I'm hoping, will be at the Palo Alto demonstration 2 days later, which I hope you, whoever you are, as you listen to the show, will also be at. And there may be some what we call networking going on there between the homeless rights groups in different cities. Because, indeed, bad things are happening in other cities. For instance, in Mountain View, a week from Tuesday, they will be doing the final reading of a so-called, well, it bans begging within public parking lots near those getting into or out of cars, next to a public street, or from a median strip. In other words, it bars holding up signs like "will work for food," and the penalty is up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine, like San Jose's, a misdemeanor for the first offense. Mountain View is a city of, what, about 60, 70,000 people, something like that. This law is being defended on the grounds, safety grounds, and there's much being made of increased citizen complaints for panhandling, camping, and loitering, none of which, of course, are directly addressed by the laws. Instead, they're making it illegal for people to be visible in public looking for money, even if they're not being abusive, even if they're not obstructing the sidewalk, even if they are completely innocent of doing anything other than saying, "I'm in need." The city attorney's report and the text of the ordinance focus on people's fears. Parking structures are a potentially threatening environment. People exiting or entering their vehicle are in a very vulnerable position. But there are no statistics of homeless people or beggars assaulting people or of complaints received for actual abusive behavior, which, again, I find telling. I heard the same kinds of arguments proposed and mouthed by Mayor Rotkin, actually now Councilmember Rotkin, and Scott Kennedy and the other liberals who defended the anti-panhandling laws in Santa Cruz back in 1994, which we now suffer under, but which I understand aren't really being enforced because, of course, they're not terribly constitutional. Although I guess there were a few cases that went to trial, and if anyone has had any experience with the panhandling laws, either personally or if a friend has here in Santa Cruz, please give me a call again at 423-HUF. I'd like to follow that. So, Mountain View is facing a law against holding up a sign. Santa Barbara is also facing a law similar to Palo Alto's, not as harsh as San Jose's, but still a bad law, which makes it illegal for you to be within the 13-block area of State Street, which is their Pacific Avenue, their downtown main thoroughfare, sitting down. The idea being that sitting down reduces the value of the businesses. That's the plan. Now, San Jose, we're going to go out on a little of the San Jose testimony. You get to hear just how nasty they are over there, and in a certain sense, just how eloquent some of the advocates are. San Jose doesn't make any bones about it. They don't talk about tripping and falling and obstructing the sidewalk. They don't bother with that. They want these dirty bums out of there, and they talk about that. So hopefully their candor will provide the basis for a constitutional court challenge. We'll see if their big mouths will be their doom. Let's hear a little of the San Jose testimony before the show reaches its end.
That's happened lately. I've been in a flower shop. My family owns and operates a flower shop. We've been in the downtown area for over 64 years. We've seen a lot of problems come and go from downtown. In the last 10 years, we worked closely with the police department to clean up the area we're in because we had a problem with prostitution. So a red light vapor law was passed to clean up our area. It seems like the minute we start bringing things to the showpiece that it should be, we encounter another problem, such as people hanging around our front door for hours and hours at a time, sprawling out on the sidewalk, blocking the entrance of our door, most importantly, blocking our display windows, which cost us a lot of time and a lot of energy. We have somebody front area is a public urinal. They've taken the tile up from in front of our store, which redevelopment just recently put in several years ago. They just sit there for hours and hours on edge and cause havoc. They deter people from coming in our store. We get phone calls from people that may go to Karen Theater or one of the restaurants the night before, call us the next day and say, gee, you're a really nice shop, but there was a lot of people just sleeping or hanging or stalling in front of your doorway. So I was really kind of feeling funny about coming in because I didn't want to be hassled. Well, that's not the image we want to project. We want to project a healthier, professional image in the downtown. And with this issue going on and on, it does not allow us to project that image. People coming in on conventions during the summer have come over to our store and said, is this the ghetto? What's going on here? I see people sprawled out in front of your store. How does a store such as yours survive? Is that the kind of image Santa Fe wants to give to people coming here with conventions? I don't think so. I know it's not the image that Blossom Floral wants to project to anyone. We would like our doorway kept clear, and we would like people away from our windows for their own safety, because a lot of times, sitting there, they're banging up against the windows, and they can't cross the plastic room. They don't think they're going to improve all of it.
William Betts, my personal apology is to David there for his love and intentions on us. So this is a capricious and arbitrary ordinance over a capricious and arbitrary district. Ordinances should affect the entire city. Mr. Pandori has basically stated the inequality of shopping malls to the downtown. Why don't you put them with an alternative under CEQA under an equal provision? Conditional use permits will then require the merchants downtown to pay for or basically address the sidewalks. There is a dedication of land to the city for these sidewalks. Why not return the land to the merchants where they will then have control of at least a portion of the sidewalks in front of their businesses? This is a land use and planning issue that should be addressed under CEQA. With this, the merchants basically can go and control things. However, the shopping centers also have free speech in mind where people are allowed to sit or be around the place of businesses, and they do have a right. Should we shepherd the masses? In San Jose, we find our masses are shepherded by canine units and horse patrols, running them from dawn to dusk, from the Guadalupe to the Coyote and back again. What we have is overt reactions of the city, a police action that is actually something else, which is a business. These people in the downtown area that you are speaking of, for instance, have empathy for sale. Some ask for a donation, and they receive a thank you in response. This is no worse than the United Fund, Salvation Army bell ringers, or anyone else in the town. Well, I work for food. Most people can't offer a job if they offer them a donation. But this, we have to look at it on a city-wide basis. To basically confine this to the mere downtown area, the city of Hammerville, also known as San Jose, has delineated Taylorville downtown. Now we have royal privileges for the fiefdom of Pandori with new boundaries. This ordinance should not be passed. Thank you.
Scott, as you here, from the Homeless Alliance Ministry. Just today, we're down at the church serving meals to the homeless. And I think everybody here is mindful of the fact that there are people living in third world conditions in the midst of one of the most affluent cities in the United States. This is a growing trend everywhere. San Jose need not be vilified. They're not causing the problem. But what city is addressing the root cause of homelessness? The lack of affordable housing. Cities throughout the nation have criminalized the poor, vilified the poor, tell the poor you're not welcome here. But what city has the moral fortitude to say, you are our brothers and sisters, the homeless are children of God, and you're welcome in this city. We'll do what we can to take you in. We'll open abandoned buildings. We'll consider you one of us, and we'll make this your city too. That's the vision of San Jose that I have, I worked in the downtown churches. When the armories closed, we took in 200 people. 200 people. Those people today are living along the river. Those people today are sleeping in front of your businesses. If the city council has the vision of San Jose for the future, what is the future of the poor in San Jose? Is it going to be a city divided? A city where the poor are cast out or embraced? One of us or one of them? That question is incumbent upon you to answer. And those of us who work on the front lines can tell you unequivocally, the problem's not going to go away. It's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Families with children, working people, housing is the answer, not criminalizing the poor. God bless you.
Thank you,
Scott. Next speaker.
Thank you.
I'm Candy Russell. I can't back the motives down. I'm against this, as well as the zoning and amortizing ordinances, which will be discussed next month. It targets the homeless and all others, some that are not homeless. We like to hang out downtown. I'm downtown a lot myself, and I never see anybody that would want to sit in the doorway or anyplace else where people climb over them all the time. And I never see anybody in the door, in those doorways besides going in or out. So this is just another law to target people like us. And I know I would rather have the homeless and the poor and the group home people here than those who would disperse them. And what else did I want to say? I'm hoping that this law is not passed for that reason. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Let me call out the next...
Yeah, and that was the San Jose City Council testimony against the sit lie law. They're a very nasty misdemeanor, 66 square block, don't sit down, you go to jail law. That's coming up for a final reading on Tuesday the 22nd at 2 o'clock at their City Hall. That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadside.